Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
All right, I'll start again. Good evening, everybody. So thank you, Les, for inviting me to speak today. It's been a few years. I was looking back and was unsure whether to give a way-seeking mind talk and then realized I had done that back in 2014 and then another talk in 2017. So I thought I'd speak about something else today, hoping that it meets what you're looking for. So the topic that has been of interest to me that I'll talk about today is that about gratitude. And a very difficult topic, especially given all that has happened in the last 36 hours, which really leaves us wondering, how can we possibly feel gratitude? And for what? So that's what I'm going to talk about today and see if we can get somewhere with it. So I'm going to actually answer several questions that I posed to myself. So what is gratitude? How do we show it? How do we feel when we show it? How does our practice help with that? And what do we do with gratitude and suffering as what we're experiencing now? So what is gratitude? Let's start with that. And I'll give you the dictionary definition of it, which may not serve the purpose, but we should, good starting point. So it's really the quality of being thankful and a readiness to show appreciation for and kindness for and in return for kindness. And it really originates from the Latin word gratis, which means pleasing, thankful. And so we sometimes think of it as joy and hope, but it's actually very different. Joy is a result of an action, and hope is an anticipation of one. So it's really kind of two parts to it. One is a recognition of a goodness, maybe a waking up to something good. And then trying to figure out the source of that goodness, whether it's in ourselves, whether it's in other people, maybe in some higher power, if you believe in that, or maybe in fate, or maybe just in nature. So a famous English poet wrote and philosopher wrote that he argued that he maintains that thanks is the highest form of thought. But gratitude is happiness doubled by wonder. So, of course, looking at the scriptures, and I looked at the Katanu scriptures, and according to Buddha, gratitude is an expression of integrity. So a person of no integrity is ungrateful and unthankful, while a person of integrity is grateful and thankful. I hope I said that right. So this gratitude, this thankfulness that he refers to, he talks about being advocated by civil people, and that it's entirely on the level of people of integrity. So that's kind of trying to understand what gratitude is. So then the next question is, how do we express it? So personally, when I look back at what I do, I tend to express it many times in words, many thanks, in actions, in the form of thank you cards, notes, and maybe even baking goods, baking cookies, or cooking food as a way to do that. So I found this book called The Thank You Project. And the author describes how in her midlife, she set about writing letters to all the people that influenced her. And so that was her way of expressing gratitude. I looked at a Roshi Joan Halifax's of the Upaya Zen Center, and in her book, she describes how she writes to at least one person every day to thank them for the good work that they are doing, the blessings that they've contributed to her life, or the love that they've given others. So growing up, each time I thanked my mother, she'd push back at me and point and tell me there's no word for thank you in the particular regional language that she and I shared. And I really never quite understood that growing up. And it really took me years to figure that out, what she meant by it. So let me share a Zen parable that kind of at least helped me understand a little bit of what she was trying to, I guess, tell me indirectly by pushing back at me. So this is about Saisetsu, a Zen master, of Engaku in the Kamakura Prefecture. And he required larger teaching quarters. They were overcrowded. So basically, there was a rich merchant by the name of Umeza Seibai. And he came from Edo. And he decided to donate 500 gold coins, and they were called ryos, for the construction of this larger teaching facility. And Saisetsu said, all right. He handed it to Saisetsu, and Saisetsu said, all right, I'll take it. So Umezu gave Saisetsu the sack of gold, but was dissatisfied with Saisetsu's attitude. He said, he was thinking to himself, well, one can live on three rois for a whole year, and and he's not even thanked me for 500 of them. So Umezu says to Saisetsu, in that sack are 500 rois. So Saisetsu replied, well, you told me that before. And Umezu says, well, even if I am a wealthy merchant, 500 rois is a lot of money. So Saisetsu asks, do you want me to thank you for it? And Umezu replies, you ought to. So Saisetsu then says, why should I? The giver should be thankful. So coming back to my mother pushing back on me. So really asking for thanks has really, or even expressing a thank you or gratitude has many interpretations. It kind of labels an action that is very natural, such as giving money to a monastery. That is a natural act. Or a mother caring for a child. That's a natural act. And it labels it as something as being good. And Saisetsu didn't want any of that. According to Saisetsu, for any action to be complete, it must include gratitude. So being awake, according to the practice, is to be grateful for every opportunity. So that was kind of a insight that made me think about what my mother was trying to communicate to me. So the question is, how do we feel when we express gratitude? What's the effect of it? So personally, I realized that the actions that I described above really gave me a momentary sense of well-being. Not an enduring sense, it was very momentary. And there's actually a body of research, quite a bit of research on this topic, that shows them when people are made to express their gratitude, whether it be through thank you cards, whether it be through letters, journaling, it actually leads to many positive outcomes, social, psychological, health states, the increased likelihood of optimism, people exercise more, they have fewer injuries when engaged in sports. So there's a lot of obviously positive things that happen. So in Two Treasures, Thich Nhat Hanh writes, it's only when we live in the spirit of gratitude that there will be happiness in life. The key is living in that spirit of gratitude, which is, I think, what Saisetsu was saying when he meant by being grateful for every opportunity. Which really brings me to the question of how does our practice tie in with this or help? So Kazu Tanahashi wrote or translated Dogen's work, and this is in Enlightenment Unfolds, which is a sequel to Moon and the Dewdrop. And he writes that according to Dogen, continuous practice, day after day, is the most appropriate way of expressing gratitude. This means that you practice continuously without wasting a single day of your life, without using it for one's own sake. Why is it so? Your life is a fortunate outcome of the continuous practice of the past. You should express your gratitude immediately. So in Branching Streams, Suzuki Roshi actually explains this further. He says, if you can just appreciate each thing one by one, you will have pure gratitude. Even though you observe just one flower, that one flower includes everything. So what that tells me is that our practice actually enables us to go beyond expressions of gratitude and momentary feelings of happiness to create a deep, enduring state of gratitude, what Thich Nhat Hanh referred to as the spirit of gratitude, and what Suzuki Roshi describes too. So it really makes us more appreciative of every moment. We're better able to recall past instances and look at them with a sense of calm and equanimity, not just in a positive way, but as they truly are, and yet be grateful for them. And that might even include things that are negative. So it's what I think Les in the last newsletter wrote, finding our way back to reality and our true self. So it takes us a step deeper than what the scientific research says, although they don't say to negate negative events. There's certainly more emphasis on recalling positive instances in developing gratitude. So Zen teacher Norman Fisher, in one of his podcasts on the practice of compassion, what he wrote was, the practice of gratefulness is not as much about a feeling of a certain emotion. It is about understanding who you really are and understanding what your life really is. In other words, our practice really provides us with the wisdom to be grateful for our life in its entirety, regardless of time, whether past, present, future, or its nature, whether it's positive or negative. So which brings me back to that question that we're all facing today. And that is, how can we be grateful for events that are traumatic and create unbearable suffering? I mean, such events, sadly to say, are inevitable and pervasive. So look at what has happened to 21 families in the last 36 hours. So in that same podcast, Norman Fisher says, after a gradual acceptance, which in this case could take much effort, tears, sleepless nights, and could stretch into months and years, we realize that in the end, it was a good thing because of our pain. We have way more love. We have way more tenderness. Because of our pain, we really understand other people. We are really sympathetic to them. Because of our pain, our lives are so much richer. We can be broken by what happens to us forever and ever. The only way we cannot be broken is when we finally come to the place where we can say, And this is the key point, I think. I would have never chosen such a thing. But yes, finally, I am grateful. I know this seems implausible. And all I can say is that it is possible. So some of you know, many of you know, that I suffered losing a 19-year-old son. Yes, it does take tears, effort, months, years, decades maybe. But through my sitting Zazen practice, which I started when I lost my father in my 20s unexpectedly, it planted the seeds of that deeply ingrained spirit of gratitude that Thich Nhat Hanh talks about and that Suzuki Roshi alludes to. It's a gratitude for every opportunity that Saisetsu talks about in his parable. At the outset of my son's passing, I appreciated the outpouring of love and support from friends, families, neighbors, strangers. I appreciated the fulfilling nature of my job and how it gave me opportunity to impact many. And in 2012, when I arrived in Mountain View and I found our teacher Les and the Sangha at Kanando, I was grateful for a place where I could deepen my practice. So that's all I have for tonight. Thank you. Yes, Les.
Jayshree, can I ask you a difficult question? Based on what you told us tonight, what would you say, what could anybody say to a parent from that town in Texas that just experienced that shooting? What do you say to somebody who's just lost their child to some evil? What do you say? Is there anything we could say?
I think I have made that mistake many times. I'm going to be perfectly honest. Because I lost a son, I think I have the knowledge, and I felt like I knew I had the words to give people, because I have, when you go through a tragedy like that, for some reason you encounter many people. I just was at a funeral 2 days ago of someone that lost a 22-year-old child in a tragic boating accident, who had lost her husband 2 years prior. And so I encounter many people like this. And initially I felt like I had the words. I think there are no words. And I think the only thing you can do is at that moment, hold the person in whatever way you know to hold them. I don't think the initial period of time there are any words. I had cards. I cannot tell you how many cards I received. Hundreds. Hundreds. I didn't open them. I couldn't. So words, there is no place for words at a time like this, not to the families. I think it's arrogance on my part when I would go to people and give them words. So 2 days ago, I just held the mother. That's all I did. I held her and I held the daughter. There was no words. And I sat through the funeral. I was there in spirit, present for them, and that's it. Dave, did you want to say something? Yeah.
There was a drama that I saw on television, a British drama years ago, where a young teacher suddenly, in the blink of an eye from an automobile accident, lost his young wife and his two children. And another teacher, who was his dear friend, was trying to comfort him and tell him that in time, the wound will heal and all these kinds of things. He was trying very hard to be kind. And the young man just said, "Oh, how shut up. I'm just trying to figure out how I can get through the next 20 minutes. And I thought that really sort of captured exactly the kind of thing that you're talking about. There just are no words in a moment like that.
Dad? A good friend of ours lost a 29-year-old child a couple weeks ago. And my wife, that's one of her best friends, and she was able to go to the funeral. I was out of town, and I really was suffering with not having gone. And my wife said, she went to the funeral, and she said, "Don't worry about the funeral. You know, we have to be there for a long time for them." And that meant a lot to me. And it's a responsibility. If I really care, it's my responsibility to be there.
Megan?
This is just a question, but did you ever open those cards, or what did you do with them? Or did you keep them for a while, or?
I still have them. Someday I will open them. I'm not ready to revisit that. I will revisit it, but most of the people were there at the funeral. There were 600 people there, so.
Wow.
But I guess the key thing to Les's point is that words, you know, don't at that point, later on, yes, but not at that point. Like, we can't say anything to the families right now.
Mm-hmm.
We just can't.
Well, thank you.
Soto?
Yeah, you know, tragedy is tragedy. It's not anything that needs to be fixed. And I had a younger brother who died very young. And my mother was pretty upset. And she was concerned about being upset. And I remember at the moment that she expressed all that, it occurred to me, she thought something was wrong because she was upset. And it occurred to me that something would have been wrong if she wasn't upset. You know? So, you know, it's not anything that needs to be fixed. It's messy, and that's all there is to it. You're going to be, it hurts. And I don't think you can comfort anyone, especially, you know, right shortly after it happens. It's just messy, and it just hurts. And I don't know. That's how it seems to me, you know. So we all get concerned about how we can comfort them and how we can help them and all that. And really, like you said, I mean, there's not much you can say or do. It's just got to be experienced. I think maybe that's a bit simplistic, but that it seems that way to me. And I didn't, you know, I mean, I was upset about my brother dying so young, but it didn't concern me that I was upset. I expected to be. And I didn't need anything. I just was going to be hurt and upset. So, but anyway, as me.
I think this is what many of the parents, probably at Sandy Hook, probably in Texas, are going to struggle with, is, which I struggled with, probably your mother struggled with, and that is that when you have other siblings and other family members, the question is, do you give in to that grief, or do you stay present for the survivors? And this is a struggle most parents, I think, go through. Many of the, what I read about the victims, many of them have younger siblings, older siblings. So I think that is the dilemma that perhaps your mother faced, but I mean, I don't know, but that is what parents face. They're concerned about the surviving children.
Yeah, that's a thing. But again, it's just all part of the whole thing. If she denied her grief at that moment, I think that just would have complicated matters. You know, oh, I'm going to sacrifice. I'm not going to feel this grief for the other children. That would have just made it more complicated for her and the rest of us, I think. But again, who knows? Anyway.
Diane?
Thank you, Jayshree, for your talk. We seem to be talking about grief and grieving, and your topic was gratitude, and I think they go together. I think that maybe you don't have one without the other. Last week, I had the privilege of hearing Malala speak in Redwood City. And after her talk, someone asked her, did she feel hate and anger toward the Taliban for what they did to her? And she said, no, she forgave them. She said that there was such an outpouring of love that she received during her recovery. There were so many people who supported her that support of love and compassion that she received, she then felt to express toward those who hurt her. I thought that was kind of a profound thing for her to say. I guess it's difficult when we have pain and suffering to not become angry and hardened, or to isolate. Or I think sometimes there can be some, as you say, some gratitude that grows from that. And I think our practice does help us to be so very present in the moment that, I don't know, if when I go out for my walk in the morning, just hearing a bird sing or seeing all the beautiful flowers that are blooming now, it's just, sometimes it could just be overwhelming how wonderful it is that we get to be in the midst of that. But then when I think about people who've experienced loss and all the horrible things that are going on in Ukraine, it's hard to know how to balance that, and it almost feels like it's not fair. I shouldn't be enjoying this beauty and this comfort and this safety when other people are suffering such loss and devastation, and it's hard to balance it all. Anyway, your talk brought up a lot of things, so I thank you for that.
Thank you, Diane. I think Norman Fisher put it well that, you know, from this, the pain does come a lot of tenderness. And if those who suffer can get there, not everybody can. We all know people who have suffered who don't get there, but to the extent that we in our practice can do that, suffer pain but get to a place of tenderness, I think that's where I mean, as we were doing the, when we do our sutra, it says that we practice our way with gratitude. I mean, if we can always remind ourselves of that, I think that's really important.
Thank you.
Lisa?
I was saying, thank you for your talk. And for saying that that going through tragedies and incredible pain help us to, that suffering help us to understand others, and sometimes that's the only thing we have. And I'm grateful to you for saying that. This line from the loving kindness meditation comes to mind. Let no one by anger or hatred cause harm to another. And I wonder if you have any reflections on that. Diane just spoke a little bit about that now, about Malala and how the love she received helped her to forgive the people who caused her harm. But what do you think about that? What do we do with that hatred and anger?
In this specific instance of the Texas shootings, it's natural for us to feel that the young man was, as they report in the news, was evil, is the word they're using. But I think we in our practice have an understanding of that he probably had, they said he was bullied and all these negative events he had growing up. I don't know if the parents will get to a place of forgiveness, but as Malalia did. But I think our practice tells us that. Not necessarily forgiveness in the way we use it, you know, the way it's taught in different religions, but more an understanding of the nature of the situation. I think that's what our practice says, that we need to look at reality as it is. This young man, probably the circumstances were not good. He should have had access to guns. He did. There was no background check. So that the circumstances surrounding everything. So who are we to point fingers? Who are we to judge his actions? We can only see what is and the reality of the circumstances and you know, take actions that we feel would change that reality now going forward. I think our sutra is absolutely right. You can't have hatred towards another. If you see it in its entirety, you realize that. I mean, I can tell you that also going back to my son's death, there were lots of circumstances that, you know, without going into details, that I could have had anger, and I did. And then somebody told me, a very wise person that was kind of in my sphere at that point in time in my life, you know, said, you know, to not, that would just create more problems and not to pursue that avenue. So, and that's what I did. I, in fact, did something very different. I did something opposite to that, which I won't go into again, but, you know, I won't say it was forgiveness. I don't want to use that word, but it was something that was opposite to what I could have done, which was to hire a legal team or something like that. So. Yeah. Kumar?
Jayshree, do you think when something like this happens, we come to the realization of the fragility of life, that this is something that is life itself is amazing. And how, and it, all of this has just been making me think how much of our time we waste by being judgmental and being mean and being really bitter with people. And the whole idea behind sitting is, I heard this somewhere, this is not my idea, is the transformation of consciousness into awareness. So where words, what we can do is change the words that we use towards ourselves and change the words that we use towards other people. So it has really got me thinking about all these things. I've been thinking that this is something that is really, when something like this happens, it's a revolutionary. It turns your whole world upside down. And you start saying, I'm going to start with me. I'm going to move forward this way. I don't want to see this. So that's how I see it. Thank you.
I just want to say, when I planned my, when I was preparing the talk, the Texas incident had not happened, and it just was kind of, you know, I didn't know what to do with it, but I thought it was appropriate for us to have, to feel what all the wise Zen teachers tell us, to have a spirit of gratitude, gratitude for every opportunity. And I heard many of the parents say that. They said, don't take a second for granted, as I was watching the news. And I think maybe that's a good takeaway for us tonight.
This is also, sorry, I might not be here for a long time, but maybe today is my first time to see you. I'm able to, previously I'm not able to see you. Maybe that's, this is all they talk about, that because this one is give us chance to connection. You know, so because I can see it, you know, can hear it. Right? We have eye, we have ear, we can't see it, which is so I'm lucky to know you, Jayshree.
Oh. I'm grateful to the Sangha, as you all know that. I've said that. But I don't want it just to be words.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.